Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Hey, we're streaming now on Facebook. I don't know if that's what you were waiting for.
I'm also waiting for the intro music.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. For those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much. And please continue to help spread the word that each week this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. We will introduce you to top professionals and talented authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, I would really appreciate if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know that can benefit from today's subject. This is one powerful way we, together, can make a positive difference in the world. Now, many of our shows fall under the category of catch them doing something good. Now, this is certainly one of those shows. With all the negative and divisiveness that's out there in mainstream media right now, I hope that you will find answersforthefamily.com to be a place you can go to see and hear some of the good that is happening all around the world. And I want you to know that I am grateful to all of you to take your precious time to listen to this show. Please remember, this show exists for you. And with that in mind, if there was ever a time in recent years that we needed to focus on gratitude, this is the time. And my son, Chase, and I wrote the Attitude of Gratitude Journal, something that at the time was geared toward teens going through some changes in their life. Well, we're all going through changes in our lives, so please go to our website at answersforthefamily.com and download a free copy. It is our gift to you. All I ask is that you subscribe, which is for free, and give it 21 days and comment on whatever platform you listen to us on, what focusing on gratitude has meant to you and your family. Now, one of the many quotes that's in the journal, which happens to be one by my son, Chase Cardoza, and that is, go for it, chase your dreams, and be grateful for the ones that you catch. Now, our guest today is also the co-founder of Powerful You, James Purpura, whose journey of transformation with his wife, Steph, is nothing short of extraordinary. Before they met 15 years ago, both of their lives had hit rock bottom. They were both financially, emotionally, and spiritually bankrupt. Life had beaten them down and shattered their self-esteem. And at the lowest points in their life, they met. And they were united by a shared vision of creating a situation to where they would become more. They started the only place that they really could by working on themselves and helping each other grow. They believed in each other, but more importantly, they challenged each other every step of the way and never settled for less. James, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Alan, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here. Just so you know, I know I was texting. I didn't want to be inconsiderate. I was actually trying to get my team to share the feed onto our Facebook page while we're on here so that they can simultaneously watch us have this discussion. So I certainly wasn't trying to seem distracted, but they were, I don't have the link. I'm like, go look.
No, but in this day and age, you know, the idea is we want to get out. We want to reach as many people as possible. So I love the fact that you're doing that. And for anybody else out there, if you're watching it and you want to take the time, hey, start texting some of your friends and tell them how they can log on, where they can see it. You can see it live through Facebook Live by going to latalkradio.com, and it's running live there. Now, afterwards, it will be on YouTube, which will still be a video, but it will also be on audio. So anybody that listens through Stitcher, iTunes, iHeartRadio, SoundCloud, whatever it is, there is probably a way that you can connect to this show and listen. So if you have somebody that is going to be working now, tell them they can go in through their platform and they can pull it up and they can listen whenever it works for them.
I'm excited to be here, Alan.
So James, to start off with, the title of your new book, which is also the title of the movie, which is Perception, Seeing is Not Believing. Share with us why seeing is not believing and what has changed to put us in that situation.
Actually, nothing, nothing's changed, Alan. So the reason seeing is not believing is because, you know, so oftentimes you hear people say things like, well, I'll believe it when I see it, right? Mm-hmm. But the underlying premise behind perception is that we don't see reality, right? And so, well, what do we see? We actually see what we believe. So it's not that seeing is believing, it's that believing is seeing. And that's the actual truth of reality. And so oftentimes, you know, we walk around and we think about our lives and how do we become conscious creators of our lives? And there's two concepts that really dictate how we create our lives. And those concepts are perception and emotions, right? Everything that you are, everything that you're experiencing is dictated by your perception, and your emotions give your life the only meaning they have, but they're also a feedback mechanism for you. And I think that so oftentimes everybody's running around like we don't have insights into what it is that creates our lives, but we have all the insights. People just haven't taken the time to understand them. And that's where the title of the book comes from.
So I talked a little bit about kind of what you went through, but share with our listeners a little bit more about your journey that brought you to the point that you're at right now.
You know, what we were trying to demonstrate in both the book and the movie. So the only difference between the book and the movie is the book is written by my wife and myself, and it's everything that's in it is our unique and content, where in the movie we've have lots of different teachers coming in and sharing their, you know, aspects of the content we're talking about. But essentially is we're taking you on a journey through two people's lives, and in this journey we're saying that everybody's on a path to somewhere. If you don't wake up and pay attention, you might end up somewhere you don't want to be, right? And that's what the movie's about, is that there is no secret in life. It's like, you know, you can actually get some insights onto where you're going. And it's just simple math. It's like, well, where am I today? Right. And if you look at like the different categories of your life, are my relationships getting better? Or are they getting worse? Right. Is my money situation getting better, getting worse? Is my health getting better, worse, my fitness? And so it's actually simple math. You look at your life and you go back and you dictate, where was I a year from now? Right. If nothing changes, where will I be a year, you know, from now, and where was I a year ago? And so it's just a simple math equation. And that's where it gets challenging, is because I think that most people believe in kind of an act of God versus change, like something's going to come down and change me. But that's not how change works. It's small progress over long periods of time. And so essentially what we do is, you know, in the story, in the movie, in the book, I tell my story of being bullied mercilessly by a teacher in kindergarten, right? Mm-hmm. Every day I would, she'd call me up in front of the room before I'd go to the special ed class because I had learning disabilities, tell me I was stupid, right? Make the whole class call me stupid every single day. My mom was a manic depressed person. She didn't have the capacity to defend me. My dad was off partying. And so this is something I had to deal with. And so essentially, you know, fast forward a bunch of years, I'm sitting in a jail cell. And the question is, do those two things have anything to do with each other? And the answer is they absolutely do, but they didn't have to, right? And that's the part of the story. It's like, you know, everybody's on a path to somewhere. If you don't wake up and pay attention to where you're going and what's driving your behavior, then you're going to end up somewhere you most likely don't want to be. And, you know, we go from the jail cell to me meeting my beautiful wife and creating big companies. It was like 9 years from that point till I had made my first $1 million. And so it was like, well, how do you go from there to there? And there has to be an interrupt of our current behavior or thought patterns in order to change.
You know, a lot of what's going on right now, I believe, is people that are not living their life. They're living a life that somebody else is telling them to live. How much of this was you focusing on your life, or you and Steph focusing on the life that the two of you are making, and not being manipulated by what other people are telling you your life should be, or in essence, you know, what you needed to believe to either move forward or to follow whatever it was they were saying?
Well, you know, as we started to change after I got out of jail, we took zero account in what other people said. We decided we were going to dictate who it was we were. Mm-hmm. And so I often tell people, the first question you have to stop and ask yourself is, who are you? Right? I mean, who are you? Have you ever thought about who you are? And it's like, well, you can't really describe it. It's because you are the sum total of your beliefs. Some people like to say that you're the sum total of your experiences, but in fact, your experiences are a result of your beliefs. So there's a simple question I ask people all the time to kind of dictate what I mean. And I'll ask it to you, Aaron. Would you have better self-esteem?
Sure.
What would having better self-esteem do for you?
Would probably soften some of the highs and lows. Not that they're extreme highs and lows, but that I think at times when my self-esteem isn't at its best is also times in which I can be brought down and I don't feel like I'm at my best.
Right. And so I ask people that question all the time, and they all answer very similar to you. It's like, I'd show up differently. I'd be more confident. You know, I'd have more stability. And it's like, I think we can all agree that that's probably true, right? And having self-esteem probably, you know, good self-esteem impacts every aspect of your life, just as bad self-esteem, you know, impacts every aspect of your life. And so I say to people, I'm like, well, what is self-esteem? Well, it's just your opinion of yourself. So if having great self-esteem, Alan, would make such a difference in your life, why don't you just change your opinion of yourself? Right? And people are like, oh, wait, what? Right? What do you mean? And it's like, well, what is your opinion of yourself based in? Because that's who you are. It's your beliefs about yourself. Mm-hmm. And here's where everybody gets trapped. It's exactly the question you asked. And such a beautiful question, by the way. It's this. Is, well, I don't even know what beliefs my opinion of myself is based in. And that's actually not the right question. It's like, whose beliefs are your opinions of yourself based in, right? Because as we grow up, you know, we have experiences, right? And as it relates to these different experiences, we choose to believe things about ourselves that are not true based on the opinions of others, right? And so I'll ask people all the time, I'm like, would you, you know, if you had a really important decision, give it to a five-year-old and ask him to make that decision for you? And they're like, well, no, that's ridiculous, right? And I'm like, well, most experts agree your self-esteem is established by the age of five. So if self-esteem impacts every decision you make, then you are doing that. And so what we're trying to tell as a part of the book and the movie is that almost everything that you believe about yourself is tied up in somebody else's narrative of who you were, right? But it doesn't have to be that way. And so if we take myself, when I was sitting in the jail cell, I had this cool epiphany on. And I used to like pray and meditate every day. And I used to write these long lists of people who had harmed me. And I had this long list in front of me because I was going to go into a prayer and offer these people forgiveness. And I looked down at this list and I thought, the only common denominator between all of these situations is me. What if I somehow created all of this? And I thought, I'd never really considered I might be the creator of my existence. I thought life was happening to me, not because of me. But I couldn't ignore this fact. So I went, well, what does that mean if I am the creator of my existence? Well, it means all this stuff's kind of my fault and I probably have to take ownership of it, number one. But if I'm not, it means the world really is a terrible place because bad things have happened to me and I probably don't want to play anymore. And so, you know, I decided on that day I was the creator of my experiences and I was going to understand what it meant and how I created those experiences so I could create something new and different in its place. But the next question I had to ask myself was, did my abuse define me, right? And my answer to that question was, well, if it did, I'm stuck forever because I can't go back and change the abuse, right? And I was like, so that didn't define me. And I was like, well, did everybody that's ever had abuse allowed it to define them? And the answer was no. Yeah. So it couldn't have clearly defined me. Well, what defined my experience? What put me in this jail cell? And here's what I came to. It was this. It's not the abuse that defines you. It's what you choose to believe about yourself having lived through abuse, right? I wasn't stupid, but here's a person of authority, you know, telling me I'm stupid every day. So I chose to believe I was stupid. I chose to believe I was not good enough. I chose to believe I'd never be good enough. And I chose to believe the terrible things that were being said to me. Now, if I had great parents at that point in time and they would have intervened and defended me and got me some therapy, I probably could have made different choices, but I didn't have the capacity at that point to make a different choice. And so I chose the beliefs that put me in that jail cell, right? It was that set of beliefs. And so oftentimes I tell that story and people go, oh, you were only five. Don't do that to yourself. And I'm like, stop taking my power away. They're right. Like, well, what do you mean? I'm like, even though I probably made the best decision I could with the information available to me, it was still my decision. And if it's my decision, I can go back and change that decision and then change my life. But if you take your power away and you say it was somebody else's fault, mm-hmm. then you take your power away because it's like, well, I didn't decide that. They told me. You have the decision on what you want to believe about yourself.
Well, you're touching on something that is it hits home for me, and it's something that I've discussed with many young people that I've worked with, and that is that they've come out of a form of therapy where the therapist starts with, "Don't worry, it's not your fault. You were raised in a dysfunctional family, so it's not your fault, and don't worry about it." And we're now going to worry about fixing you. And it's like, look, can you first quit suggesting that it didn't happen or that they have no power over it or anything else? It is something that happened, and I agree with you completely. So I will then ask them, they'll tell me what it is that happened, and I'll say, what did you learn from that? Well, I learned that I'm never going to do that. I'm certainly not going to, if you say it was someone who was physically abused by a parent, I'm certainly not going to do that. And I said, so what you learn from that is that you're now going to be a better parent because of it. So rather than sit back and just go, woe is me, I'm going to sit in counseling for the next 10 years, what is it that you're going to do? So what I'm saying is I love what it is that you're saying because I'm right there with you. We need to take responsibility and then decide who we really are and what we're going to do with that now.
Yeah, and I think what you said is so important because sometimes when I tell this story, people think I'm victim shaming, right? And I'm like, no, I'm not victim shaming. They're like, well, what do you mean? I said, because you need to understand what I'm taking responsibility for. When I say it's my fault, I never, ever, 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 ever take responsibility for the other person's actions. Sure. Their actions have nothing to do with me, right? And it's like, well, what am I taking responsibility for? I'm taking responsibility for what I chose to believe about myself having lived through that experience, period. The other person's actions are about them. That's what they need to take responsibility for. And I even had to change my narrative around forgiveness because when I started looking at forgiveness, it was like, it just didn't make sense to me, at least not the traditional form that I was. And it's like, well, what's forgiveness for me is, forgiveness for me is letting myself off the hook. It has nothing to do with the other person, right? I'm letting myself off the hook for the things I chose to believe. I am not a God over this other person. I cannot offer them forgiveness. I remove my tension from anxiety from the situation, and I allow them the space to forgive themselves because that's where it really lies in is like their part in it is their responsibility. My part, however small, is my responsibility. But let's be very clear. We started this narrative with the abuse doesn't define you. It's the choices you make coming out of that abuse that define you. And that's such a beautiful thing. And I, you talk to parents, and I like what you said, you know, when you think about like therapists to say it's not your fault. And it's true. The actual abuse
right.
that was inflicted on you is not your fault, right? But that had less impact on you than what that abuse meant to you, because you can choose to decide how you're going to respond to something. Another thing that I see so oftentimes is that, you know, like with parents in that example that you use, it's like, well, I'm not going to abuse, right? Well, the problem is they become completely passive.
Yeah.
And then they look weak, right? And it's like, so never stop at zero, right? I always tell people, it's like, when you incur some type of abuse, when you, you know, to the degree that you incur sadness, happiness now becomes available to that same degree. Well, people get back to neutral and they stop at neutral and go, well, at least I'm not abusing, but you're also not speaking your truth, right? Because you haven't dealt with the anger based in your abuse. So you're afraid what you're going to, the lid's going to pop off and then you're going to become the person that abused you. The other thing I tell people all the time, I'm like, who's stronger, the abuser or the abuse? Because the abused always think they're the weaker one in the situation. But in fact, here's what we have to remember, is the vast majority of people who are abusers were once abused.
Right.
And so what does that say? As an outlet for the pain they experienced from their abuse, they decided to, you know, to repeat the cycle. If you've been abused and you broke the cycle, you were the stronger one in the situation because you broke the cycle. And that cannot be understated.
Well, and I think that's a great point as well. Now, because you're talking about the fact that a lot of this is happening at such a young age, one of the things I know you touch on in the book that I felt was really powerful, talk about how one moves from fear to trust. Because many times one of the reasons why they're having so much difficulty with this is because of the fear that is instilled in them.
Right. And so it's not a one-line answer for sure, but
well, I understand.
You know, I think it's really important to understand the nature of fear as we move into this conversation, because there's a lot that goes on in the fear response that most people just don't understand, right? And there's a lot going on in the world right now, and people are acting irrationally, right? Mm-hmm. And it all has to do with fear, right? And so in order for us as an individual or us as a society to move up, we have to move out of fear into trust. And so essentially, what is fear? Fear is a loss of trust, period, end of story. Can't be explained any other way, you know? And so the opposite of fear is trust. And so the question is that, are you going to allow a situation that happened to you when you didn't have the physical or mental capacity to defend yourself to define how you respond as an adult? And most people look at that and go, well, I probably shouldn't, right? That makes sense, right? I'm now capable of defending myself. And so do you need your childhood fears moving into your adulthood? Now, the question becomes, is something that once served us, right, is that we adopt fear as a child to put in some type of response, whether that's runaway, fight, you know, scream, yell, whatever it is, to defend ourselves from, you know, said situation that has caused us fear in the past. But as we grow up, because we don't go back and understand the nature of that fear and process that fear stays in place. So what served us as a child is now holding us back as an adult, right? And I wrote an ebook recently, and I think you read it because I kind of referred to it, but it's like Breaking the Cycle of Fear. If not, I'll send it to you so you can share it with your listeners because it's a free ebook. But in that book, I talk about a hallway of doors, right? And I want you to imagine you're walking down a hallway of doors, and every time you've had a massive amount of fear put in your life, you know, you lock the door associated with that fear, right? And so let's say, I use the examples, like, let's say you had an early heartbreak in an intimate relationship, right? And so you're afraid to experience that pain again, right? And so the door that says intimate relationships, you put a lock on it, right? And now anytime this is the way your mind works, you start moving towards that door, your mind will just conjure up a bunch of fear. Oh, I don't know if this is the right person. I don't know if I can go here again. I don't want to hurt myself, right? And it's like, even if you want to go through that door, you're going to have to break it down because it's now locked, and it creates a massive amount of resistance. Now, the question becomes is that just because you got your heart broken once, does that mean you should never get into another relationship? And the answer is, well, no, that's stupid. Everybody goes through that. But so oftentimes, you know, when you lock a door, whether it be intimate relationship or whatever that might be, then that creates fear and resistance around those situations. And it's really interesting because when you think about it that way, it's like, do our childhood fears now serve us? And the answer most oftentimes is no, they really do hinder us. And so, well, how do we get over a childhood fear? And so we've developed some techniques. One of them is called the emotional integration technique. And essentially, when you understand the way your mind works, here's how it works. Is when you're having a situation, a current situation, every time you have an experience, your mind goes into your mind, which is like a database, and says, what are the experiences that I'm having that are most like these experiences, and how did I respond in those experiences? And that happens in an instant, and then you show up the same way you did last time. Well, the problem is if the same way how you showed up last time isn't conducive to what you want to get, then you're responding from a fear place. Well, what do I have to do? Well, essentially what you have to do is you have to go back into your past experiences, and you have to imprint new emotions on past experiences. So the next time, unbeknownst to you, your mind pulls a past experience to dictate what's going to happen next, it comes with a new emotional response, and you've walked down and dealt with the fear back there.
Well, we're going to take a break, but first of all, I really like what you're talking about, and I appreciate it very much. But when we come back from the break, what I'd like to ask you to talk a little bit about is the current state of the personal development as an industry, because it's something that has grown into, obviously, this huge industry. And I know that there are some comments that you've made in regards to it, and I'd love for everybody to hear that. So for everybody, stay with us, because we're talking about Powerful You. We're talking to James Purpura, and we will be right back. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. We are talking to James Purpura, and we are talking about his new book, which is also the title of the movie that is coming out as well, Perception: Seeing is Not Believing. So when we went to break, I asked a question in regards to the self-help industry as it is now, or personal development. There's a lot of different names for it. James, share with us some of your thoughts on what's going on out there today.
You know, I think that the self-help industry is completely broken, and for a bunch of reasons. The first one is one of the biggest problems facing society in general is the idea that one person has all the answers, right? Like this idolization type thing. And, you know, it's kind of a generational thing. It's like the generation that's above us, that was everything they did was based in, you know, here's the guy that can fix all of your problems. And what I tell people is anytime you hear somebody say, I'm the guy who can fix you. I've got all the answers, run in the other direction, because this person is going to lead you down a path. They're certainly not going to give you any answers. And so, you know, when you make somebody dependent on you, right, for something, and so you're not telling them, you know, why to do something, you're just saying, do this, do this, do this, do this, you might get to an outcome, but nothing's really going to change, first of all. Second of all, it's a dependency thing. And so all of the structures in this industry have been set up on this idolization thing. This person has got it all figured out. This person has all the answers. This person is my answer. And it's like, no, look in the mirror. That's the person. That's your answer, right? And that's why we call it Powerful You and not James Purpura International, is because it's all about the individual. And so the answer is that we have to be able to give people the knowledge and the understanding they need to shape and change their own lives, not from a place of habit, from a place of beliefs. And that's the second problem. It's, you know, the personal development industry is all about changing habits. And, you know, I think that from my point of view, coming out of like the 1980s and everything, you know, the problem with it seems very clear to me. And here's what happens is, and it's an easy trap to fall into. So you start getting some knowledge and, you know, you become a fairly talented teacher and people start to follow you. And you realize that it's going to take a very long time to get enough people to follow me at a really inexpensive price in order to make enough money to live. But it could be, you know, I could charge tens, if not thousands of dollars for my services, and I could focus only on the elite people, and therefore I'll make a bunch of money, and then I'll be like this thing. And so that's the other problem. It's that it's way too expensive, right? The information's not science-based. It's idle, you know, it's based on idolizing some concept or somebody. And it's not giving people the information they need to change. So one of the things we're doing here at Powerful You is our intention is to make it about the collective of teachers, right? It's all about a collective. It's like there are teachers here that will teach you in every area, but it's not just about the teachers. It's about giving people the knowledge to execute change on their own. So I'll walk people through an emotional integration technique, right? And I've had people have very profound experiences afterwards. And they're like, oh my God, that was incredible. You're so great. Thank you. I'm like, whoa. No, first of all, I didn't do anything here. I'm just a tour guide, right? Everything that just facilitated was already in you. You just didn't know how to get there. I'm the guy on the corner pointing directions. And sometimes I'll have people go, well, don't take that away from yourself. I'm like, oh, I got no issues with who I am, my level of confidence in what I can do, but I am not going to take credit for your success, because your success is your success. And so it really comes down to one of the disturbing trends I'm seeing in the industry right now is I don't know if you've heard this, but 70% of millennials want to be famous. And everybody's like, oh. So if you look at the industry, right, how they want to be famous, they all want to be influencers. Almost the entire industry has shifted to, let me teach you how to become an influencer. Right. That is really scary, because what are these people influencing in, right? Right. A good friend of mine, Trent Shelton, always says it takes 10 years to figure out a message that's going to help anybody in any substantial way. And first you have to learn how to help yourself. But now we are, you know, the industry is marketing to people who want to be famous to extract all of their money from them, using the public as an ATM machine to sell them on being something that they're not currently qualified to be. Yeah. Right. And that's, it's this perpetual, you know, I want to be the man. Right. And it's like, no, we don't need any more of those. Right. We need a collective. We need individuals to understand their power who help other people understand their power. And that's what we're trying to do.
Well, and I couldn't agree more. And as well, when I was talking about in regards to therapists, psychologists and stuff, the ones that I have been most supportive of are the ones that start out with just what you said, which is, I'm going to give you the tools to, or the direction for you to make this happen within you. And then the second thing is, and I've asked before, I said, what is your weaning off plan? In other words, to a therapist. And what is your weaning off plan with this particular young person or whomever? And if they don't have a plan to wean themselves off, I'm suspect right from the beginning.
Absolutely. And that's, I mean, that's the challenge. And I mean, I want people to understand one thing. If there's people listening to the sound of our voice right now, there's probably somebody who's considering suicide, right? There's somebody who's trapped in addiction. There's every realm of possibilities is probably listening to the sound of my voice right now. And, you know, I want people to know that if I'm different than you, right, it's not because I'm better than you, right? It simply comes down to that you don't have the information you need to shift and change your life. Success in life comes down to information. That's it. Get the right information, right? You know, good information leads to good decisions, leads to good outcome, right? Bad information leads to bad decisions, leads to bad outcomes. And so I tell people all the time, I'm like, I got this narrative. It's like, you've never made a bad decision. And they're like, oh no, I've made a lot of bad decisions. I'm like, matter of fact, you're not even actually capable of making a bad decision. And they're like, well, what do you mean? Come on. I'm capable of making, I make bad decisions. I'm like, no. And they're like, well, what is it? And I'm like, you've only ever made a decision with bad information. And so if your life is not what you want it to be, it's not because you've done anything wrong. It's because you made the only decision you could with the information you had available. And they'll tell me that, well, that's phonetics. I'm like, no. And understanding the difference is going to set you free. Because I think we all spend a lot of time beating ourselves up for all the bad decisions we made and the things we botched. But the truth is, you've only ever done the best you can. You know, if my life is better than yours, it's just because I had better information. Well, what's our source of information? Our source of information is our perception and our emotions, you know, our beliefs. And it's like, you know, I tell people all the time, it's like, I'm not better than you. I'm not smarter than you. I'm not different than you, right? I just have better information. And it's such a good thing because I tell people, like, you need to know there's nothing wrong with you. It's just an information problem. That's it. Because we all make decisions the same way. We look at all the available information. We make the best decision we can. And it's like, the information was the problem. You were never the problem. We never start out the decision-making process saying, you know what? Today, I'm going to make a decision that's going to hurt me. We don't do that unless you're mentally ill, right?
And again, we don't set out to do that. But from the standpoint, because I knew about this thing in regards to the idea of bad decisions. And so one of the things that I started thinking about, using one from the recent past, you know, there was a belief that, you know, if you strapped a bomb on yourself and you went into a different society and blew yourself up, that you're going to get to go somewhere, wherever it is that you're going to go, and there's going to be 72 virgins waiting for you. That's a really, really bad decision. And, you know, I'd like to be able to say that everybody...
That's not a bad decision. Well, I mean, no, I mean, right? It's a bad decision for you if you happen to be around him when he blows himself up. But if the belief that he has is that's the way to heaven, from his context, he's making the best decision he can. I want to go to heaven. If I strap a bomb on me and I blow myself up, I go to heaven. Right. Now, given a different context, obviously that's a terrible decision. If he knew that wasn't in fact the way to heaven, he would never go, hey, I'm going to blow myself up because I don't want to go to heaven. They're doing that for an outcome, and it's based on a belief. So I'll ask you a question. This will give this more context.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Do you have free will?
Yes.
Okay. And I'm going to argue that point with you for just a second. Mm-hmm. I would say that you do have free will, but it's not how you think it works. And I tell people this all the time. And so there's a big debate, free will debate. I don't know if you've heard of it, right? Mm-hmm. And so here's where it gets stuck is... there's one basic fundamental principle that dictates all of human life. You can only act in accordance with your beliefs based on your current mental physiology, your current emotional physiology state, right? And so when you're in the physiology of fear, you have access to one set of beliefs. When you're in the physiology of love, you have access to a different set of beliefs. But we'll set physiology for aside. And let's talk about you can only act in accordance with your belief. So when Sam Harris says that you don't have free will, it's like, well, why not? Because you have a pool of beliefs you're accessing when you make your decisions. And you can't go outside of those beliefs. It's just not the way we're wired. So therefore, you don't have free will because all of your decisions are based on this set pool of information. And unfortunately, Sam, it's true. That's how we work. But we do have free will. And this is where people miss the boat. It's that we can challenge and change what we believe. When we challenge and change what we believe, we change the pool of access that we access when we are making our decisions. And free will actually lies in the past, not in the future. It's not in the present, because when you go in and you say, let's take the bomber, for instance, maybe this doesn't get me to heaven, right? He has the choice, you know, when he's contemplating that, and he does a bunch of research and he prays about it and he goes, wait, definitely doesn't take me to heaven, right? He had the choice to change that set of beliefs that he was making that decision from. But you can't change those beliefs in the moment. You can only change those beliefs in retrospect because they actually sit in the past. And that's what you never made a bad decision is, right? If when I was a drug addict and I was sticking a needle in my arm, is that a bad decision? You would look at that and go, that's a terrible decision. Yeah. But opposed to I needed an escape, and I didn't put a gun in my mouth, that sticking a needle in my arm was the best decision I could, because the thing I didn't have a choice in at that point was to escape, right? And so I was using the best knowledge I could to escape the situation I was currently escaping. And so, you know, obviously a bad decision for you would be to stick a needle in your arm. But for me at that point in time, it was the best. I was doing the best I could with what I have. And so if we talk about this guy with the bomb, it's like, I can't comprehend that that could ever be a good decision. And it would never be a good decision for you, but it would be based on his current set of knowledge. So it's the information, not the person, that's flawed.
Right. But what my thinking is, his bad decision that takes away his free will, or my good decision that gives me my free will, is being open-minded going into that situation. So he was so closed-minded that somebody could plant a piece of information on him, and his bad decision was not being open-minded enough to even follow any sort of logic as to if this is even remotely possible. That would kind
which
of
is,
be my...
So you're absolutely right. Which, yeah. So the challenge there is dogma, right? It's like I see when people get caught in some type of dogma, it closes their mind, right? Mm-hmm. But that dogma then dictates how they respond, how they act, what do they do, what do they not do? And so even when we talk about this current narrative of everything that's going on with Black Lives Matters and everything, it's like what people fail to realize is that it's like, how do we change, right? How do we change the narrative? How do we change what's going on in the world? How do we bring healing to what's happening? And so the biggest distraction that we can fall into anytime something like this happens is, in fact, the punishment, mm-hmm. the justice. Because although justice is important, it's actually the opposite of the answer. Because justice isn't the answer. It should be healing is where we need to focus our attention, right? Mm-hmm. And so I give this narrative to people, and, you know, and it's like, we have to realize that the problem does not sit outside of us. It sits inside of us. Yes. And so, you know, as it relates to Black Lives Matters, you know, and it's like, you know, that my dad, I mean, he wasn't a huge racist, but he was racist. Mm-hmm. And my grandfather was racist. So those beliefs also existed inside of me because that was the narrative I was taught. And, you know, I chose not to believe them. I chose not to push that narrative forward. But it doesn't mean it doesn't still exist inside of me. It's alive in me. I decided I was going to stop that cycle. Now, here's the problem. And this is where it comes down to is like, as long as we continue to point the finger to somebody outside of ourselves, they're the problem, they're the problem, they're the problem. Instead of being able to say, hey, brother, it's inside of me too. And it's inside of all of us. You don't have to act through those beliefs anymore, right? And you open your arms up to the possibility of healing through acknowledging that they're not different. They're actually the same, right? If you've ever had a stereotypical thought or any type of thought as it relates to somebody's race, somebody's sexual orientation, somebody's choices, then those types of thoughts exist inside of you. And so healing comes from opening up to see, not that we're different, but we're in fact the same, right? We are the same, you know, regardless of everything else. There is more that's the same about us than there is different.
So James, we have run out of time and time has just flown by. And first of all, I would love to have you back because I would love to continue this. I'd like to try something a little bit different. There were a couple of questions that were sent in and I really always try to get those answered. If I ask them now, can I ask you to answer them on your website and we can give people the website where they can go to get that, those answers?
Yeah, I mean, if they want to go over to our Facebook page,
okay,
I can go live right now for a few minutes and answer the questions.
Okay. I don't know if I know how to do that because I have an engineer that's making this happen.
So all you would have to do, you don't have to do that. Just ask me the questions.
Okay.
When we end this thing, I'll jump right over to Facebook. I'll go live right now. And so our Facebook is powerful-u, the letter U. And I, if there's questions, I will answer those if they want to come over live on Facebook right now.
Perfect. Thank you. Okay. So let me read this real quick. So one of them reads, starting over can be so difficult. My daughter was caught with just over an ounce of marijuana when she was 21 years old and back when it was illegal. She was a junior at university at that time. She was expelled and now has a criminal record. My point is our justice system needs to be changed. There's forever a scarlet letter placed on young people who have made some mistakes. There should be some sort of a framework or time frame when one's record can be purged. Fortunately, and she gives her daughter's name, unlike so many who are marked for life, she started an online community for young people such as herself, and she is now has her own media YouTube business where she's planning to watch this show with me today because she too believes that perceptions can be changed in all areas of one's life, but society still has its stigmas. And that's from Barbara in Arizona. The second one is, when my friend died in a tragic auto accident in 2015, I found myself confused and deeply depressed for months. One day we were biking and planning our weekend with friends. The next thing, she was gone. But when something happened, I went to her grave and a single wildflower was growing out of the area that I envisioned where her heart would be. I heard her voice as clearly as if she was standing next to me say, I love and I miss you, girlie. I so agree that perception is everything, whether it was her or my own inner healer speaking, it allowed me to be happy again. There is a place in each of us that wants and can bring healing. I am so looking forward to reading and sharing your book, as these are times when we really need encouraging words to get through this awful lockdown and violence. That's from Julie in Los Angeles. So James, again, I really just want to thank you. I want to tell everybody, go to his Facebook page. Again, that's Power, and then U, the letter U, go to the Facebook page. Check out the book. I highly recommend it. And James, I look forward to us talking again soon.
Hey, I have on our website, which is powerful-u.com. Right now, we're actually filming, we're screening the movie for free. We've got a lot of free resources to help people in this time of need. And so they can go there right now and get signed up for all those resources. So it's powerful-u. I'm happy to send you a Zoom link if you want to jump on Facebook Live with me and we can continue this conversation and answer those questions. I don't know if you have time.
I can give it a try.
All you have to do is you have to do is click on the Zoom link in my email, and I'll facilitate everything else. We'll be live on Facebook, Powerful You, in 5 minutes.
In 5 minutes. So if everybody's got that, great. I'm going to sign off now. And so for everybody, if you've got that, we'll be on Facebook Live, and we're trying something new. So for everybody out there, in an effort to help a world gripped by hate and divisiveness and corruption, there is now a growing wave of consciousness, and it is sweeping the planet. Unfortunately, our media is not providing this, but the book, The Celestine Prophecy, one that I read in the 90s, it's a novel that spent 165 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list in the 90s and is now being passed around by people of all ages, feeling the urgency to unleash their own creative gifts and projects. So be sure that you put on your calendar and tune in next Monday, when we will be joined again by author James Redfield to discuss his upcoming Celestine Prophecy Inspiration Tour. So, at this time, James is bringing people together to find their peace, to amplify their synchronistic flow, to download their intuitive intelligence and break through to their greatest creativity through his inspirational tour. You won't want to miss this one. And please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com. And if you haven't already, please, right now, subscribe to our YouTube channel and click on the notification bell. If you like what you see or hear, please leave a review. It will help us reach more people, and I want you to know that we greatly appreciate it. Next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please check out our page, check out some of our latest posts. If you like them, please click on the like button and spread the word. And please remember, if you give your eyes and ears to mainstream media, they will keep feeding us the fear-inducing crap that raises their own GNI, which is gross national income. So please subscribe to the shows like this one and others that focus on improving your GNH, your gross national happiness. Remember, advertising money goes to wherever your eyes and ears go. So for everybody out there, be good human beings. Be with us next week on Answers for the Family, but you can also now jump over to Powerful-You Facebook page, and James and I are going to continue.
So do I send the email to Janet's email, or do you have an email?
Oh, no, to westshield@gmail.com. Thank you for that.
Okay, thanks.
All right.
Talk to you soon.
All right, great. Close this.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.